Welcome, listeners. To time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforawakening.com. That's timeforawakening.com, which is home base, and listen to the live stream at that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening. And listen to the live stream from that location. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. You can download TuneIn, and in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car. That's Time for Awakening with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for Awakening. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, do me a favor and hit that like button. That's Time for Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for Awakening Media, the home base, is there. That should be one of your favorites. If not, put that in your address bar. That's timeforawakening.com. Timeforawakening.com will take you straight to Time for Awakening Media. There you see more interesting content and podcasts of the different programs that you can download, listen at later times, even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforawakening.com. Timeforawakening.com will take you straight to Time for Awakening Media. Tonight, Friday evening in the city of Philadelphia, rainy Friday evening, we're in open forum. So the floor is yours. Anything that you want to talk about, let's hear it. It's open forum Friday. And we'll get started with the conversation and I guess what's going on currently, some of these news stories out here that pertains to the African-American community. We'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215 215- 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at Time for an Awakening. @gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started this evening with our program, I'll welcome in my co-hosts and Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here at Philadelphia and 7th and Arch. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir. How you doing, Brother?
I'm doing all right on this rainy Friday in Philadelphia.
Yes. Now, you know, a couple of weeks ago we were talking about the heat. Now Philly got us drowning in water, which I don't have no problem. I also don't have no problem with. They got us drowning with a whole lot of other stuff going on right now too, from the national to the local and around the world. That we should make sure we got our umbrellas and raincoats for the slickness that's going on around here right now.
Yeah, always be prepared, huh?
Yeah, I'm telling you. Yeah. But it's definitely some shenanigans going on. Elliot, I have to throw this out there. Did you get a chance to see Boldegard, Jeff Sessions' expression when Trump told him if he would have known he was going to recluse himself, that he wouldn't have hired him?
No, I didn't see the video of it. I mean, I heard him make that comment. Mm-hmm. I didn't see the video of Sessions. No, I didn't.
Yeah, it was just like, you know how somebody, like, when they say something to you, you just cock your head, look at them like, is this fool crazy? But, you know, you gotta keep that decorum. And I think like we always should look at these antics in political terms, you know, and look at it from that perspective of what does that mean for us as African people, African Americans in America, as these here, especially this here Trump show goes on, you know?
Yeah, I agree that it's a huge opportunity for our people. You know, I listen to Terrestrial Black Talk program sometime, and I hear a segment of our people call up, and when they express about the current political environment and the players involved, they talk about it as if they're worried about this situation and worried what this is doing to our country. You know, they're looking at it from the wrong perspective. This is an opportunity for our people to develop independent leadership and start working towards some type of liberation strategy for our people. If we believe that the system is failing, and listen, that's not just my belief. You can see it across the board. even white folks know that the system that we live under is in trouble, economically, socially, and politically. That's an opportunity for our people to really start developing mindsets to move our people forward. This system that we live under has only been in existence, 300 years, Richard?
Yeah.
I mean, that's no time. And when you're talking about the scheme of the existence of civilization on this planet, our people developed and governed themselves before this country was ever here, and this form of government that we live under was ever developed, and we're going to move forward again. But I think practice makes perfect, and we need to start developing mindsets each opportunity to really start developing this type of political philosophy among our people.
And you know, Elliot, that, and I'm glad you placed it in that context, because I think that is so important that we recognize, as Dr. Clark said, you know, and I think his words are so powerful, that we place everything in our historical context and not in a short round, you know, short range, not just, as you say, the 300 years or the 1619 they give us, but African people struggle to provide a means of resources and livelihood for those of us who need to socialize and respect our own humanity. But since we've been here, this political maneuvering we've been involved in, we need to always constantly, you know, deal with the mechanics and the based off of that philosophy. So I agree wholeheartedly. And it's I do see it's an opportunity. I mean, some of us, you know, Elliot, you know, and 1 million conscious and conscientious Black voters and contributors, because one of the thoughts was, from a political strategy, was to look towards 2020 election. So as this, you know, Republican, confusion, the Democratic Party, the Republican Party confusion, the Democratic Party just don't know what to do. And Elliot, that Bernie Sanders contingency of folks that's out there provides those of us, and I ain't talking about all Black people, for me, Elliot, I don't know if I'm supposed to say that, but those of us who recognize that it's important for us to be able to operate in our own self-interest from the perspective of power, that we should utilize all the tools within the arsenals that have been provided us over history to make sure that we can be able to look at the children and the children's children's future from this point right now. And this, as I agree with you, is an opportunity to do that in this franchise or this political arrangement that we're in for those of us who are here.
You shared with me an article, Richard, about the only white congressman, and he used to be, I think he still is, the only white congressman that's over a predominantly Black congressional district, which is Bob Brady. They had an article in the paper that you shared, and you raised some interesting perspectives on it. I'd like you to kind of go over some of it, because, you know, while we're in open forum, and listen, the callers can bring up any subject they want, we'll toss around some of these stories, news stories, and look at it from a Black perspective. But go ahead, Richard.
And, you know, they now Philadelphia has interesting history in its political machinery, right? It's, you know, it's a ward-based machinery, and I think it's, you know, as we know, it's in transition. So now they pop Bob Brady for providing supposedly $90,000 to pay off a political person who was running for the same office in that district, that 198th district area at that time. And this is going back two years ago, I believe. And so here they, you know, now they're actually, and Elliot, what's so funny and ironic lately in Philadelphia, everybody, a lot of people that is getting popped, men anyway, African-American men, they have women that are involved, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, they got a, and this is interesting, all the elements you like, Elliot. So here you got a white, we call it the on the Brady plantation, right? I mean, not only Brady is the congressman, he's also the Democratic Party leader, right? And he's a ward leader.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been operating this, he's been operating this political franchise for 30 years. And I hope those who are listening can look at their own political landscape and see if they see some similarities, because they probably is, you know, in the way that the ward system or in other areas, what they might call them precinct or what's the other name that they would give these political geographical areas that they have. And so here you have a person, Brady, and I have to point out he's Irish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who has been running this city since the 70s, you know, or at least the 80s. And now they decided that they're going to come after him over this here, supposedly paying off somebody to not run against him. Not run against him. Now, the person, this Moore, who is the person that he paid off, is also somebody that he groomed, Jimmy Moore, who was a municipal judge.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Now Elliot, this, I mean, now, like you always mention about this political franchise, right? But now it's supposed to be Jimmy Moore's fiance, right? Carlene Cavisness, who actually was the go-between, supposedly, between Moore and Brady.
And she happens to be a pastor. Exactly.
Yeah.
Pastor of a church.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with that church.
All the elements you talk about, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All the elements you talk about. And Elliot, not only is she a pastor of a church, she was also the finance person, as you know, in 2008, the deputy finance director for Senator Hillary Clinton. These are the cast of characters. I mean, does this get any more, you know, this is Philadelphia local politics. And it almost looks like the national politics, and you know, that's bringing up Beauregard, and then I can never say this guy who just took over, was it Santucci or whatever,
mm-hmm.
that's the just took over for the communication person who was just got the I think it was some director Purvis, they just relieved him today, I believe, because he was supposed to be leaking on him. Well, she turned over this here Carolyn Cavis, she turned over to the FBI. You know, under testimony, a plea bargain, for her to, you know, I don't know what they offered her, and she's only 34 years old, you know, Elliot. I mean, so, you know, in the scheme of things, she's not really that old to be doing all this maneuvering, plus being a minister, right?
Mm-hmm.
But she's playing the game, and somebody snatched her to get Brady. And remember, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about how Rendell was saying that the ward system need to be revamped. You know, now, you know, Rendell has been big dog at the Democratic Party. So he's saying we need to fix Philadelphia corruption in the political ward. So here we have this Brady who's being brought in over giving somebody that he groomed, who is a municipal court judge, supposedly $90,000, not to run against him in a black district. And this judge ain't had no money. I mean, he collected, when he was running, he only had $22,000 in his war chest And they said he was in up to his canoes and debt, just trying to run. So it does, something just don't sound right. You know what I mean, Elliot? But that's what's going on in the local politics. And I think if people go around their areas in their where they are, I think we could see that going on in the South, in the Midwest, in the Northeast, or at least wherever there are large black populations of people, the control that is being held on. But I think for Philadelphia, there's a transition that's going on. And the reason why they want to move this party mechanism, this ward mechanism, and these political bosses out of the way. You know that, now what's the electrical union?
Yeah, that guy, what's his name? It escapes
me. Doherty?
Doherty. Yeah, another Irish. Doherty, yeah.
Doherty, another Irish, right? Who just, the feds just popped him. But you know what's the kicker in this, Elliot? Now I give him a credit in his response. In relationship to this Brady piece, who is now they pulling out that was close to Brady that might have been aware? Ex-Mayor Good. Yeah. Poor Good. He just can't catch no break.
I seen his name mentioned. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They put the mic in front of him and he said, well, it's an investigation. I don't know, you know, the truth will come out. The truth or the facts will come out as the investigation unfolds. But him and Brady has been together ever since Good started his political career in the 80s. And so here now, you know, at 78 years old, you know, he's now implicated, at least in being aware of this here whole thing.
And he's a pastor also.
But there you go. Oh, man, I can't take this. I can't take. But I think it was last week he was making a reference to the abhorred behavior, some of us would think, that pastors were having and drooling all over Hillary when she was in running for the election.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, when they laid hands on her down there at Richard Allen's church. He would probably mm-hmm. turned over in his grave if he could see what was going on. But, you know, they all down there laying hands on her like she was some type of savior. But, you know, Richard, let me say this in reference to what you citing about this article. And that's why you have some of our young people and older people disillusioned about politics. And they should listen. I fully agree with them. They should be disillusioned about this political environment. But sometimes I think that some of our people can't see the forest for the trees because they see some of our people involved in this and they approach politics just like Europeans with a European mindset. Give an example. The guy that you talked about, Moore, that was running against Brady, that supposedly, allegedly took this money to bow out of the race. Now, if you're involved in politics solely to help your people and somebody come along and want to pay you money to buy out of the race, especially a guy that you're running against because you see that he's is not doing anything for the community, then why would you bow out? Why would you take money unless you're in it for that? And then when you have these lackeys involved with him, some of these pastors, they ain't ministers. That woman out there is not a minister. She's a pastor. Some of these pastors that act as go-betweens to take money and deliver it to other people, and then when they get popped, you know, they'll got the potential to be the first one sitting up in jail for a long period of time. You know, that just shows you that these people that have black faces are in this political mechanism, and they're really doing a disservice, not disservice to the community, but they're the kind of poster boys. Mm-hmm. That some of the people are looking at when they say that our people don't need to be involved in politics. Last week when we had the discussion with Brother Oba and he mentioned about his feelings about politics. But I think we have to realize and understand, just like you said about utilizing tools, we can utilize this, especially locally. If you get conscious people to run for these seats, that we can turn things around in some of these communities, especially with the money that flows through it. Because there's tax money there. Black people pay taxes in this country. So if you can get conscious individuals locally, especially in these northern cities, it's already happening in southern areas and southern cities. Certain southern cities is practicing a black belt philosophy and black belt politics that Chokwe Lumumba and others, and I'm talking about the father, tried to push. And you can see it coming to fruition now with a lot of conscious blacks that's running for seats that represent independent black parties. And some of them are winning. And if they're not winning, they're making enough noise where some of the young people are starting to notice and get involved. So that's a way that we can utilize this political system to our advantage. And plus, some of our people need practice anyway. If we're talking about liberating ourselves and governing ourselves, you need practice governing.
Right.
What better way to do it, in the interest of your people? And I'm not talking about these fools now that's out here with black faces taking money, taking bribes, paying people off, and then looking like the cat that caught the canary when they get nailed. Acting as go-betweens. When I was reading, listen, that pastor out there, I'm familiar with that area, Ardmore, Pennsylvania. A good friend of mine had a business steps away from that church. It's three churches out there in Ardmore. That's one of the most popular ones. A lot of people know her in that community. And come on here. It's just like the other way, a woman that had been playing gospel for 50 years here in Philadelphia, pastor running around to several churches and all. Then she got nailed taking money. But then got that Italian lawyer down there to say that she was developing Alzheimer's and she didn't go to jail. Some of the other people did. This type of stuff, come on.
I think this is Carice. Carlin, she got the same lawyer. She got Perone or somebody that is speaking for her.
Oh, she got the same lawyer that Louise Williams?
I'm not sure. I'm looking at the lawyer, but I'm not sure if it's the same one that for the person that you were talking about, the state representative that you were talking about. But I believe it is. But it's I have to confirm that. But this is the kind of culture. Political culture that we bought into, and it ain't no new thing, Elliot. I mean, I think that your point is really so important for us when we're talking about it's only a means to an end. It's not the end.
Mm-hmm.
It's only to be able to utilize it if we're going to utilize it as an educational process towards self-governing, but not necessarily. I mean, there's other pieces that, in my mind, that have to be put in place, because if we're going to operate truly out of some of us would like to operate truly out of us national as a nation within a nation, or as a nation within states, then we have to create the infrastructures necessary. But this can be a training ground for those individuals.
Exactly.
But you know what, Ellie, what you're raising, that has to be, that we're seeing, that obviously don't exist, it has to be principal to the ethnic identity that you belong to, first. First, you have to be ethically ethical. You have to have some you have to have some ethical foundation to yourself. Other than that, you are out there just being a 22nd century political whore.
Yeah.
You know, with a neon, and I'm being a little gross at this point, because
at this point, a large population, because we're competing against a lot of people. When we talk about gentrification, Elliot, and we're looking at the city of Philadelphia, and you see the type of development that's going on, is that for the black people, for us, who they say at least 40% is living in poverty? These 300,000, a half a million, $1 million homes, are they for us? These jobs that they're expecting to come in, are they for us? When they said we're so dismally prepared for the type of jobs that they're creating. And I'm making that distinction, that they're creating, not that we're creating. Are we actually prepared? So, and do those people who are coming into these cities or coming into those homes or coming into those jobs, who are coming into those neighborhoods, don't you think that they want to take political control over those resources that are public resources?
Certainly.
Certainly. And all that costs them is their participation?
And I'm glad you mentioned that the figure of 40% of African Americans, according to some of these reports, live in poverty or live from paycheck to paycheck. Because if you look at that, and we got a couple calls, I'm going to go to them in 1 second. I just want to read this, Richard, because you were talking about the congressman here in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia area, Brady, who's a Democrat. Let me read this, because you find now a lot of black Democrats is up in arms talking about that they want to be involved in forming this party agenda. 2018 and 2020. Chuck Schumer in New York, I think Monday, according to this report, it says the Democrats are launching a new policy agenda Monday aimed at fixing an economy and political system that they allege is rigged against the American people. In New York, the New York Times published an op-ed piece Monday entitled A Better Deal for the American Workers, where Chuck Schumer lambasted the Republican economic and political policies while admitting that Democrats have too often hesitated from taking on those misguided policies directly and unflinchingly and failed to tell American people what they stand for. Schumer promised to offer additional ideas from rebuilding rural America to fundamentally changing our trade laws to benefit workers, not multinational corporations, in the coming months. The New York senator confessed that in the last two elections, Democrats failed to articulate a bold economic program for the middle class and vowed not to repeat the same mistake. This is the start of a new vision for the party, one strongly supported by House and Senate Democrats. Now, it's language there that any thinking black person critically looking at these folks, white folks making these policies, can see clearly what they're talking about. If you go on that New York Times page, they created a publicity shot for this New Deal Democratic platform. And it shows about maybe 15 or 20 people in there, like workers, businessmen, all of them white.
Mm-hmm.
This is supposed to be the New Deal Democrat policy. All of the photographs was white. This Schumer said that that he promises additional ideas to rebuild rural America. You know who they talking about. Because that's who they claim came out of the woodworks to vote and put Trump over the hump. Then he said he confessed. This last paragraph, he confessed in the last two elections that the Democrats failed to articulate a bold economic program for the middle class. Now, if you stated earlier that according to some statistics that 40% of black people either live in poverty or live from paycheck to paycheck, and he's talking about a bold new perspective to appeal to the middle class, he's not talking about black people. It's clear he's not, and it's clear that party is not. So if the Republican Party don't want black people and the Democratic Party don't want to appeal to anything black people want, but they want your votes, then when are our people going to stop being fools for either one of these parties and start developing an independent mindset and sometimes get some type of black belt politics or black sovereignty approach to this politics that we live under? Let's go to a couple of calls that we got on. Let's go to 602.
Yes, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot. Good evening. It's Brother Marcus.
How are you, sir?
All right. The political system is just like the educational system. You know, years ago I heard a speaker said, you know, if you have a glass of cyanide, right, and you pour out half the cyanide, and you fill it up with juices and vitamins and minerals and stuff like that, you know, it's still cyanide. You know what I'm saying? So it's the educational system is the same as the political system. You know, this guy Chuck Schumer, our liberal senator from New York. So these people are a joke. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Isn't he the same one that just said about putting a bill through? Is that bill S-270 or whatever, or 720 to have any protesting against Israel where you can be locked up?
Felony. Yeah, there's a felony. They make it a felony if you say they want to boycott Israel. It's a federal offense. Mm-hmm. Legal people, their own legal team, they say, no, that's against the law. You know, that's a violation of freedom of speech. You know, it's ridiculous. You know, but I want to say something about Trump. Now, Trump is cunning. You know, Trump, he say what they want to hear, but behind the scene, he doing something else. You see, you know, these white Anglo-Saxons now, they're getting fed up with Trump, you know. You know, if you listen to them, what's going on, they kind of getting fed up with this guy because they're saying, look, he's saying one thing, but the people he putting in place, you know, they doing another thing. You know, this Scaramucci guy, and they ain't happy with them people, you know. They ain't really happy with them people, and they're mad that he attacking his AG. They pissed off at that. You see what I'm saying? Because that's their man. See, so
Beauregard. He's old KKK.
Exactly. So they like
KKK. Marcus. It seems that it sets up. If this, as Elliot said, thinking critically, because what it seems to set up is the South versus New York.
Yep.
The South populist, old Democrats who turn Republican, who are the Southerners against the money makers of New York. And Trump they connived them to vote for him.
Exactly.
And he just like...
He playing the game. You see, because you see, and they mad because they saying, look, he's surrounded by liberals. You know, his daughter is married to this guy, Kushner. You know, Rosenstein is the one that, got rid of, referred Nuna in there. You know, so it's one big mess. You know, it's one big, So as you said, Richard, this gives us an opportunity to get our act together.
I know.
Because the Republican or the Democrat, they ain't looking out for our interests. So we got to look out for our interests. You see? But as you said, if your mindset is of the European mindset as black folks, then that's why you're going to see all people worried because they're actually white folks. We're black outside, but their mind is white inside. So they're worried. What's going to happen? You know what I'm saying? But we who know what we can see down the road, we are on the right track. You know what I'm saying? We just got to get ourselves organized. And I see it happening, And we don't need everybody. You don't need everybody to get organized. You only need a few good folks, because when you got everybody, it's a whole bunch of confusion. See? And we can't take them confused people with us right now. So we got to go prepare to develop our economic base, which is very important, you know, because without an economic base, you can't do nothing. See, so we did that economic foundation, we got to put that in place and put some type of mechanism in place in a way we could, you know, can sustain ourselves, especially the ones on the front line. And then, you know, we could move. But I see, you know, and as they say about these black politicians, they don't fear black people. And it's not only here in America. It's in Jamaica. It's, you know, it's in Africa. You see, that corruption, you know, they get rewarded for bad behavior. Mm-hmm. You see, the white man pat them on the head. Oh, good job. I got something for you. And so we got to have something in place to give, you know, make them, there is, so, you know, let them know, look, you ain't going to just, you know, sharp us and get away with it like that. You know, some punitive measures in place to let them know. You see, so they say love is universal language. I don't think so. I think pain is the universal language, because everybody understands pain. Anyway, you take care, good brothers. I keep up the good work. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your call, sir.
All right.
You know, Elliot, there's another article that came out that tapped what you and Brother Marcus were saying. Black activists tell Democrats put an African American on 2020 ticket. And I only bring that up because these are, in my mind, this is not the mindset that we are looking for. On their list, as this it says, on their list are a growing roster of black politicians, notably Senator Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, and Attorney General Holder, DeVale Patrick, amongst others. Now, this is who they're trying to, while at the same time is telling them the black vote turnout dropped in 2016. So how can you go and make some demand now? You know, you talk about Schumer, you know, how can these here guys make any kind of demands and they can't even control the voting outcome of the constituency as their natural constituency, because they're not providing anyone with anything worth that they can see, feel, or touch.
Wow. Let's go to 646, area code 646. 646.
Hey, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard, how are you?
Hey, sir, how you doing?
Hey, brother, listen. I saw a good post this evening saying that Donald Trump said that there would never be another black president because of the bad job that Barack Obama was doing. But hey, man, Barack Obama's a better white man than Donald Trump will ever be. And has ever been in the eyes of a sane individual, because that cracker there, Neanderthal, knuckle dragger, filthy, stinking devil, is just out of control. Lord have mercy. Do you think the white man ever thought that they would have somebody representing their country in the manner, in the nature of that dog?
You know what, Jay, I'm glad you said that, because you can see, especially black folks with any type of looking at this thing critically or looking at white people for what they are, you can see that they're totally embarrassed by this man. They don't want to come out and criticize him, because I've never seen, now I'm no political junkie, I could care less about politics, but I've never seen an administration like his. This man hasn't served a year yet, and he fired guys quit, guys sniping at one another, calling people incompetent, threatening. I think he went to that Boy Scout jamboree. And now, number one, you having a political, talking politics with children 9 to 13 years old on average. He told that guy, because he had the health secretary was there with him. He said, we're going to make sure we get this thing pushed, and you better make sure you get it pushed or you'll be fired. And then he started laughing, but that he was serious. I'm saying, like, wow. This is like a comedy of errors, and Europeans are really embarrassed.
Of course, you would have to be as a Neanderthal. How could you have this piece of garbage represent your ideas and your values, even though in the process he's assisting you and doing your dirtily, dastardly thing? He's supposed to be a refined knuckle dragger like Spence. I mean, you know what I mean? Like Sessions. Sessions is the perfect example of a white man and his behavior towards putting his foot in your ass. Look at everything that he's doing. He's doing it calculating with so-called dignity in regards to whiteness in a very smooth and deliberate fashion. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He's doing it smoothly. I mean, he's really putting the foot to the metal on us in a fashion to where as he's doing it so smoothly.
But this
idiot is just a crass, low-lifed dog, man. I mean, it's amazing that a white man who's supposed to be the head of the empire, but even act and behave the way that he's behaving. It's insane. It's really, really insane. And it's embarrassing. And it's also eye-opening for us to show this example to our children what the Neanderthal really is and like. You know what I mean? It's like taking them out of the caves. But and I think, showing them to the world.
I think we have to be careful, though, because look at it from statecraft and look at it from strategy. And you set it up, Jay, a perfect paradox in the relationship to two different operational powers. Because even though he's talking about Sessions, is Sessions stopping doing what he's doing?
Not at all.
You know what I mean? So, and as people are focusing, so from a policy perspective, in the position that he's in and laying down law, Sessions is continuing to do that, even while he's telling him, I would have never hired him. One.
Because of the simple fact he understands his role and position in whiteness.
Right.
Donald Trump doesn't understand his role and position in whiteness.
But
he can't even serve the white people that put him in office, their interest. If you look at everything that he's doing, those that he put in that put him in office, he's screwing over them royally. Or he's gonna screw them over royally. And now the agenda is really gonna come into focus to what it's really all about. This tax reform. Oh, this tax reform is going to... You thought healthcare was brutal. I think this tax reform is going to be way more brutal. And you know, the sad thing is, we got a lot of Negro peens, man, who's going to get that extra couple of dollars. That's when it's all said and done, are going to be happy, but don't realize that if they was to put that healthcare forward and got it passed, they'd have been spending that money on Big Mama if they gave a damn about Big Mama. Because you got to remember, things have evolved to the point to where as now we put our Big Mamas in a nursing home when we can't deal with them. I went through it in my family. You know what I'm saying? Now with the cuts to Medicaid and Medicare, Big Mama ain't going to be able to go into a nursing home. Mm. And ain't nobody want to deal with Big Mama, if Big Mama got Alzheimer's and dementia, bruh, that's no joke.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Now, the money that it's going to cost you to put Big Mama in the nursing home, if you got that type of moral decency, is going to be more than what that cracker is going to give you. See, because the cracker, he got the money. He can afford to spend it because he got A1 health care. He got his position. Those that he's trying to take care of in regards to that 1%, they don't got to worry about Big Mama taking care of her. They got to worry about, is he going to repeal it to where there's not going to be no taxes on inheritance and things of that nature. That's what they trying to do. So, I mean, you know, we always feel as black people, unfortunately, that we got a position in this effing country. But the bottom line is, you ain't got no position in this country. You know what I mean? I love the way I hear this Negro P talk about politics and all of this stuff. And they just show you, whenever they want to do you, they just do you. You're not in no position to stop them. You got a party that's supposed to be your pillar, your backbone, your friend, you know, there to protect you, and they don't do nothing to protect you. They were the ones who put you in this trick bag.
Exactly.
For what reason? So that insurance companies can make more money and gouge you on a certain level. But no, you're going to believe in them. You talking about voting. You talking about going to march to make a white man do what? White man ain't going to do anything because you marching. Only thing white man going to do is say, well, listen, y'all Negroes buy this water, get this sandwich, leave a couple of dollars on the tailway, make sure y'all clean stuff up, and act like y'all got some sense, because if not, we going to put you in the big house, and you're going to pay you some fines to help the coffers and things of that nature. When it's all said and done, we're going to go back to business. Because the reality is this, and this is the real reality. White folks are using their usefulness for people of color, especially black folks. They just showed you what they thought of the one group that got more power than me and you as African people, the gay mafia. Now, that may be his mistake, messing with the gay mafia. I think he may have screwed up messing with the gay mafia, because the gay mafia now are in the back rooms organizing and strategizing on how they're going to spank his ass.
But they're the ones that's engineering this here. I mean, a part of the whole, I don't want to say they, but that contingency of a new formation is the ones that's a part of this whole gentrification. They're one of the part of the whole new, I mean, it used to be called the Great Society, but the fourth industrial revolution. Because they have the wealth, the skills, and they have the influence besides white privilege.
To do what, Richard?
To put the Negro
at the bottom.
As you said, it's not even, and if we look at it from a vantage point, they don't have to put us at the bottom. We're already at the bottom.
Yeah, but they're gonna keep, listen, when you get a person on the bottom, a true champion puts the foot to the metal and keep on pounding. That's why the Atlanta Falcons lost to the New England Patriots last year, because they didn't keep their foot on the pedal. You know what I mean? That's just reality. You don't take your foot off of nobody's neck when you got them on the ground. That's why MMA is what it is, and the UFC and all that other nonsense. It's until you count out, and I'm going to make sure you count out. And the bottom line is, the gay mafia got something for you, boy. See, they admitted to quiet, because if you notice, they ain't really been protesting the way one would think, but oh, they got something coming, and you know they going to get you. Because
they're part of this transition.
Yeah. And that's the thing with this. You know, white people have a rule that it seems black folks haven't learned. They strike when it is strategically beneficial to them to right. strike. We don't understand that. We got to respond. I just saw something earlier on Facebook. They had two of these white people who committed suicide in New York. They jumped out the window with their kids in the room and all that. This black woman had the nerve to call them dummies. Now, even if you feel that way, a clear-thinking African woman should never put that out there. They should never put that out there. You don't say, I don't even say crass things of that nature because of the simple fact. What if somebody said that to you about your family member who, because of whatever the stress was or whatever they was going through, made that decision? You don't know what people are going through. You don't know the challenges of what people are facing when they make that final decision to jump from a building that you know once you go out that window you ain't gonna survive. You know what I mean? I mean, sometimes we just gotta, okay, I'm happy as hell they did it, but you're not supposed to say it. You gotta have some sort of dignity and chill, because in order to make that type of decision, person got to be in a lot of pain. Do you know how many black folks there are in this world that suffer through that type of depression and that type of pain that do it and don't do it? A lot of our people don't understand the severity of depression and what it will lead you to do. You know, and we think it's funny. No, certain things ain't funny, because you're dealing now in a situation in the country to whereas once they repeal this Obamacare, within 4 to 5 years from the repeal, you're going to see a lot of tragedy that I don't even think we realize we're going to see, because you're going to have a lot of people suffering, man. And that's a hard thing to witness someone suffering and dying when there's no reason for it or no need for it, only to give a cracker, a filthy Neanderthal, a couple of extra dollars that you know something, which is so tragic, but nobody even talks about it is, they never spend it. They never spend it. That's what's so sad.
But don't you think that this, what you're describing, is what occurred during the depression of the 30s? And don't you think that during that period, when before Roosevelt did what, you know, they've been trying to fight against or push back ever since, is put people out so that the wealthy can be able to, the wealthy, what was them at that time was the barons, right, be able to control everything, and the poor will sit on the side and do just what you said. Don't history tell us that this ain't no new thing for America?
Well, no, it doesn't not tell us that. But the thing is, do we see it for what it is and for what it's worth?
I hope we do.
No, we don't. And that's the tragedy. That's the tragedy of it all. Because you know something, the sad thing is, like most white people, a lot of black people, when they get into a certain position, they want to be able to oppress other people because of that greed factor. You know what I mean? It's like when you got, you know, and the only reason I say this is because I've been in a situation where I've had large sums of money at one point in time, and oh, I think I'm going to do this, and oh, I think I'm going to do that. You know, honestly, 7 out of 10 times, all I do is put it in the bank and don't do nothing, because it always hits me in the back of my head, do I really need that? You know what I mean? What am I going to do with that? I'm only going to enjoy it for a few minutes or something like that. And that's how the nature of a greedy white person is. They just want to know they have it for whatever reason, because they don't spend it. It's just, how do you justify having millions and millions of dollars in the offshore bank account? You know what I mean? I mean, if you really wanted to spend it, would you leave it in the offshore bank account to not be able to spend it?
And I don't think it's about money, Jay. I don't think it's about money. It's about power, and power is about control. And it don't even have money. Money is only, as they tell us, with dollars. It's just the medium of exchange. They're showing. Okay. They're showing that the game, and that's what you're seeing on the national scene amongst them. It's power feuds. It's power fights going on now. And your point is wholeheartedly taken, because the question is, for Black people, how are we demonstrating power? And how can you demonstrate power, as the point that you make, if you can't take care of your own? If you can't be able to protect and provide a livelihood for your own, how can you be demonstrating power to somebody else, against somebody else?
The funny thing is, those same things that you're talking about, with this whole immigration thing going on the West Coast in regards to the immigrant workers, they can't even find immigrant workers to put the fruits and do the type of labor. So now we're not seeing it this season, cost-wise, but we'll see it within the next 2 or 3 months. And then you'll be asking yourself, well, why am I paying so much more for this? Why am I paying so much more for that? Not understand how it works hand in hand with one another, because we don't think on that level. You know what I mean? I mean, how could any Black person have the nerve to say, honestly and truly, that they want to keep a damn Mexican out of here, knowing that the Mexican do certain things, knowing that they provide a certain service? And the reality is that the Mexicans are doing what? They're working on improving their economy so that they don't have to come here. You know what I mean? But we don't see it. We don't see it like that. Because the bottom line is, what is Black people going to do if the crackers say, I'm not hiring your Black asses no more. You can't get no jobs. I'm going to cut all of the services. How you going to live?
But you know,
if the white man said, we're not going to hire Black people no more, what are we going to do? Are we in the position to hire people?
But the test has been that they have been saying that.
Yeah, they've been saying it and doing it.
And the test has been that at least 50%, I mean, and you look at the young people numbers as far as being unemployed, especially in urban areas and rural South, they hit up to 60%.
Yeah, it's off the charts. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and this ain't just something that's happening within this generation, because if you see the every cycle, and let's say a cycle is 25 years, you've seen that number be persistent. That's why we can say the poverty rate is what it is. But it still holds to your point that if with that, we still haven't been able to produce the type of employment for them and to be able to actually create a livelihood so they could be able to
we don't have a vision to do that. Our vision and what is the word? Our growth and development is to achieve.
Well, you know, but Jay, let me say this:
to be in a situation to take care of to serve white people. It's not. It's not to be independent from white folks. It's not to have our own communities. It's not to separate from white folks. Everything that we teach our children basically is to integrate with white folks and to find some form of acceptance from white folks to make them feel as though you're not some sort of threat to their ass. Make white folks feel as though that's what these parents be teaching their kids. Make white folks feel as though you're not a threat to them.
And that requires us to be able to, and I say that because I agree with you. And I see, and I can, and I think we can all track the history of that policy, that that's been the policy that we, but it's at the same time, we have had another policy. And that's the only drum I will continue to beat, that we have had another policy to speak just to the points that you made. It's not that we have, one has been absent of the other. It's one has been defeated or temporarily.
It hasn't been dominated. It hasn't been the dominated discussion.
Right. And it hasn't been because we haven't figured out how do we be able to protect the space after we do it. Because
even ourselves.
Right. Because, I mean, the Native American population have the same challenge. And they're better equipped from a framework. I mean, supposedly, historically, they're better equipped because they know they're a nation. They know that they're in a negotiation from a negotiation position. They know what the American, Anglo-Euro-American military force, intelligence force, and State Department has done against them. And they still have rapid unemployment, rapid healthcare problems, because as they try to grapple with how do you defend your position while you're trying to build your position in an environment that is totally will wipe you out.
Well,
and these boys will wipe you out, and we know that.
Well, you know, the thing boils down to this. We better figure it out soon, because this ship is sinking, because you got an a-hole at the head of the ship that has never been seen. I mean, I don't even know how any intelligent intellectual cracker could stomach him. How is he able to do business on supposedly the level that he did business with the lack of intelligence that he has? I mean, there's no smoothness. I honestly wonder, how could he sit in a room with some of these so-called intellectual Europeans that are supposed to be titans of business? Did they think he was a joke? Did they take advantage of him? Could that be why he had so many bankruptcies and things of that nature? Because if you really understand his business, in all honesty, his business is really nothing more than a brand. It's not like he's really structurally built so many things. It's like I'll give you a perfect prime example. I learned this a long time ago, man. I was friends with Freddie Brown, who played with Georgetown basketball and made that errant pass, right? So we basically grew up together. We know each other real, real good. And Freddie Brown, a lot of people don't know, is an extremely rich cat. And the way that Freddie became rich was he basically just had an association based on the fact that he was a player at Georgetown and he didn't get in any trouble. So guys that he met at Georgetown would come to him after he graduated, after he got on Wall Street, and after he do his thing, and would give him points on deals. And through that, he was able to accumulate his wealth just by association. You know what I mean? And I had a young kid that I was mentoring at the time, and I told him, look, man, all I want you to do, because he realized, and I was glad I caught him young enough to understand, you're not going to make the NBA, but what you are going to do is you're going to be able to get a scholarship. And no, you're not going to get maybe a Division I scholarship, but you're going to get a scholarship. And sure enough, this is what happened to him. He got a scholarship. He went to college. He played ball. He did pretty good. And he said to me, I was offered a job to work as a counselor at the Dalton School by one of the parents whose kids went to the Dalton School. He said to me, what should I do? I said, you better take that damn job. Sure enough, he took the job, he did his thing, he went back to school, he graduated, and now my man is on Wall Street making seven figures. All because of the simple fact that it's with association. So some people like Donald Trump get into these situations of association, are able to, you know, deal and to do what they do. But I don't understand, in all truthfulness, how this bastard's been able to do it, because he's a real dumbass. He's not, he don't have, to me, I'm just saying, based on what he showed the public, the swiftness that one would think, or I may be wrong, I don't know, because he's damn sure richer than I am. But the point is, if you ask yourself, Richard and Elliot, do he really seem like the type that has the intellect to have done the things that he's done, even though we know he's had four or five bankruptcies? Or is it really boiled down to white privilege at its highest level?
I was saying, and you touched on when you mentioned about the networking part. Remember George Frazier, who Elliot, you had on your program a while ago. He's always been that. It's been about those relationships, that networking relationship that we as Black people had before. Remember when, at one point we were talking cooperatives. If you go look at the turn of the century, 20th century, we were doing cooperative farms, cooperative banks, yeah, cooperative, whatever. But then you notice the language changed from cooperatives to individual capitalists, right? Where it's just the individual. So what you have to do is now, and you're talking about the doggy dog. I got
now, wait a minute, Richard. Let me go back. And I want to stop you there. What you just said in itself shows a getting away from cultural values. Mm. Because just like you mentioned before, the cooperatives was things that Black folks was doing at the turn of the century. And then they developed this individualist mindset, which is a European mindset. And that oil and water don't mix. It kills our people. This mindset is a death knell to our people. It stops any type of unity. It stops any type of cohesiveness. It stops any type of development.
You can't behave like a European and have success over an extended period of time because the values are not the same. The whole thing, you know, it's like that coffee. It's like that coffee challenge. You keep on putting white milk in your coffee going to become white. You're going to lose all of the blackness. And it seems like we have done that. And then again, we have people like, you know, Joy Reid, who, you know, I didn't even know until recently, because I've never really paid too much mind to the chick, talk like a dog about Hillary Clinton, but then all of a sudden she comes back to the Black community praising this no good filthy stinking cracker. That right there is dangerous. How could you talk about a woman almost 10 years ago like a dog and then come back to your community and ask her to be a part of her wickedness and say that she's fit to lead us, but before you said she was no good, not to be trusted, she was this and that. So who do I blame? Do I hold her accountable for that type of behavior towards the community?
Certainly.
To lead us down this wicked path? Should I not say anything to her because she's supposedly a visual spokesperson for our people? You know what I mean? And that's what we do. We allow Negroes like her to get away with treachery. You know what I'm saying? All because the white man done gave her a platform to spill her ilk and confuse us.
Richard, I mean, listen to Jay, before I let you go, we see it happening now with Kamala Harris. Now,
she's dangerous.
They're pushing her out there, and black folks is not aware of things. They see a woman, 35, 40, I don't know how old she is, relatively attractive, and that's all they're seeing. And they see a potential for her to be on the ticket in some form or fashion. But this woman made her bones as a law enforcement in California, putting black folks and other people behind bars. Now, she went out there as a senator. Scotty Reed made a editorial about it. Went out there to visit some largest women's prison in the state of California. And California is the largest state, so it's probably maybe one of the largest prisons, period. But it's a woman's prison. And she praised the women for their spirit of trying to change their life when they get out. Now, when you're tagged with a felony, it's hard for you to change your life when you get out. And she said that she went into this one area where the people was making American flags. This is modern day slavery. They're making flags that's going to be sold at places for, I don't know how much they sell these flags for. But it's a plan in there making flags. She was over, I remember before she became senator, when she was still out there, because they always had those fires, she was using prison population, slave population out there to fight fires. Now, these men are professionals. You're paying guys $2 a day, slave wages, to fight fires where professionals are supposed to be fighting fire. They were doing everything. Running.
Didn't she get caught up in the sex scandal with Willie Brown?
I don't know.
The mayor of San Francisco. She got caught up in the sex scandal with old Willie Brown.
But I'm just talking about her being part of decimating black families for a number of years. Now all of a sudden they're pushing her to be some type of, but that's the people that they push. Integrationists, assimilationists, the popular media pushes those black folks out there. And a lot of our people that get caught up in looking at the television, they get caught up in this Fengali type of trance. That's all they see. The Obamas, the Cory Bookers, the Kamala Harrises. That's what they see. They don't see some of these other people that's trying to do stuff behind the scenes or push conscious black candidates out there in some of these local elections to try to turn the tide of things. They're not going to see that unless some other people try to promote them, which, that's what we try to do all the time. But I'm just saying, you're not going to see, when they turn on that television, that's what you're going to see. You're going to see the Cory Bookers, the Kamala Harrises, and whoever else.
Well, all I'm going to say in regards to that, brother, is the mulatto is a hell of a thing, man. You know, that mulatto is as dangerous as they come, man. You know, because, you know, they never, in all truthfully, and if we're going to be honest about it, have an African agenda. Their agenda is always a Eurocentric agenda, man. Their whole thing is to protect the interests of either their white mommy side or their white daddy side. And when it comes down to us, so be it. And you know, unfortunately, we don't realize that. But I don't even think we can.
But Jay,
if the truth be told.
But Jay, you know that I can't agree with that.
Why, brother?
Because it's too many people.
Why you can't
agree? And I want you to chime in on this too, Richard, because it's too many people that's been involved in our struggle. You're talking about popular people now that you see. I ain't talking about that. I'm talking about since we've been here. It's too many people that's been involved in our struggle that it was a product of a rape or something by some of these white people on plantations.
Yeah, but that's not the issue right now.
Oh, see, that's what you do. But see, you're talking about right now. Wait. You're talking about right now.
Their agenda. I'm talking about what their agenda is today. Their agenda today is not blackness. They're not looking to make the lives of black people at the expense of white people better. If they got to pick and choose who they're going to defend, it ain't going to be no brother or no sister over no European. I'm sorry to say it with you, my brother. I respect you, but it is what it is. And, you know, unfortunately, we just got to accept it for what it truly is. Because they're not going to do it. Because who takes care of them? White folks take care of them. Let's be honest. Black folks ain't taking care of the mulatto.
But I don't,
how is black folks taking care of the mulatto?
I don't know if... And I'm not disagreeing with this, Jay. And Elliot, the reason why, because I think that where we touched about is about value, and I'm looking at the policy. You know, I don't know to what degree now, quote-unquote, mulattoes are a political force setting policy for black people. I'm taking the assumption that all black people are put out of any political power. And the reason why I would use it is looking at the Atlanta race. I'm looking at an article now about the Atlanta race. Now, they're saying that they're possibly going to lose that after 40 years of having black mayor political power, because there are black individuals, and I don't, the pictures that I've seen don't look like mulattoes, who are running for the mayor seat, which would allow this white female, the council person, Mary Norwood, to actually win. But when the question was asked to the people in the district, and this is the mindset that goes to the value in relationship to the part of the point that you make, Jay, one of the persons say, personally, this is not an issue, talking about race, right? Shouldn't be an issue for the city. It should be about what's right for the city, not about race, creed, or color. And this is a black person saying that. Crime, that's pretty much it. Just the crime rate is really high right now. So whatever who vote for would have to deal with that, said another. So, and I hear that in Philadelphia. I've heard people making reference that that mindset that's a part of black people around where we live. That's the determining factor in relationship to the type of policy that would be looking at that we have to, quote unquote, do for self. If they don't see that it's about race, whether they blue, black, or high yellow, if they don't see it, and we obviously, the end shows that a lot of us don't see it. And then the ones who do see, who are in denial, as we said about these political operatives, or these people who are looking for, or cap, you know, call them black capitalists for short term, or people looking at, you know, to make money out of for themselves. If we see just them as individuals, that's the policy that is being promoted compared to networking, cooperative, that we have to have political franchise and sovereignty.
But isn't everything in this country about race?
That's the point. But when we're they have been able to maneuver us from believing that there is some universal notion that we're all in this together, and that it isn't about race. I mean, we heard it during the Obama period. That wasn't. This discussion. What it was called? Something race or post racial. They were trying
post-racial.
I mean, they were trying to create the conceptual framework that we have moved beyond, because you got a black president, beyond race, even though the misery index of black people, now they'll even codify that. Well, it's poor people. But percentage-wise, there's more black people who are living in dire poverty and living under rules and regulations by law that are implemented primarily because of race. But the projection is, well, we're going to deal with the prison industrial complex, or we're going to deal with the teenage pregnancy, or we're going to deal with the male incarceration rate, or we're going to deal with guns, or we're going to deal with the poor education and give children early childhood training or education, daycare. That's what they give us, but never say that all of that has been created because of the racial structuring of this society and mindset. And then got the black people, we in general, to buy into, well, it's because you ain't doing all you're supposed to do. I'm afraid of you. I'm living right beside you. I seen you grow up. But now I see you as a teenager, and I'm afraid to come outside my door to say anything to you.
Well, you or know, your that, mother. That, well, you know, that's the society that we live in. That's the society that we don't control.
If that you, we allow
if you don't
to
control
live
anything,
in.
Then, you know, what could you do? You know what I mean? It's not you. See, the point is, we do not control no narrative in this country on anything. We don't set the agenda on anything in this country. We don't set the agenda on death. We don't set the agenda on nothing. It's always about them setting a narrative and putting us in the box on what we're responsible for having in this country that is not in our best interest, that is against their interest. It's never about the collective interest of the country. It's always a white or black issue. All these other groups come into it, but they're not on the side of black people. They're always on the side of white people because they're looking to benefit from whiteness. That's why the mulatto is as dangerous as he is, because he's always, most of the time, and let me say this, not all of them, but most of them are going to take the position of whiteness. Everybody, it's the perfect example just happened. How could you leave a black woman to go to a white woman? Now, you're supposed to be the super mulatto, this actor. You're supposed to be woke. You're supposed to be all of these things. But whatever went down between you and that black woman, you decided you was going to leave her. And instead of finding another black woman who you basically culturally identified as when one looked at you, you now decide you want to go and find a white woman. Now, yeah. What is your obligation? You don't have no obligation to me or to my people because you choose whiteness. Why do you choose a mate for your evolving, for your development? Why do these black men go out here gain riches, and it seems like all of them are out there picking these white women instead of building a black family because their mama and daddy ain't telling them. Marriage is about transferring wealth.
But remember, Jay, when we deal with these individual incidents that are projected, as you said, that are part of the narrative that is given to us, we have to ask ourselves and be able to think critically. And when we have in our dialogue about, well, what is the percentage of that? Because you can't, sometimes they make that one incident and we carry that narrative and we can look, I mean, when we look around, just look around the space that you at, you don't see a whole lot of mixed marriages going on around where you live.
Well,
but the way they project the narrative.
Yeah, it's like it's all over the country, like it's going on.
Given that one incident, because it does go out to the many individuals, it makes it seem like everywhere.
No, where I live at in Harlem, you got more of these mutt dogs living and mingling than ever
but
before.
But they coming in, Jay.
Listen, Bob, I ain't never, listen, I'm mentoring kids. And, you know, I had the kids on one of the kids that I'm mentoring now about this white girl, you know, thing that he got going. I had to really, really have a talk with him and break it down to him, you know what I mean? And I had to get ugly with him because I got to explain to him that this is your perpetual enemy. You got to take care of this black sister right here and build your family so that our people can continue to grow and have a place in the world. You can't be looking at this white girl because somebody's telling you she's going to do this and she's going to do that. No, no, no. Your job is to build the black family. What I'm telling you to do is not to gain wealth to take care of no white girl.
Well, Jay, let me say this before. Let me say this before I let you go. What's her name? Omarosa. Ben Carson. Are they mulattoes? What you consider mulattoes?
No.
Are they dangerous to black? Wait a minute. You don't have to go further. Just answer the question. Are they what you consider mulattoes?
No.
Are they dangerous to black folks?
Are they dangerous?
Yeah.
On a certain level, yes. But it's,
okay.
It's,
now, wait a minute. Just stop there. Don't. Just stop there. Wait a minute. Jay, we can't both talk at the same time. Jay, you don't have to qualify it. Just answer the question. Now, they're not, right? Now, here's the show that broadcasts out of New York. Two black women on there. The popular show, The View. You got a young black girl that's what you consider a mulatto that said, well, I don't know whether one of her parents is white. Maybe it is. Raven Simone, that don't want to be called black. I'm not black. But then this week, or a couple of days ago, you had the elder statesman on the show that made another stupid statement just like the young black girl. Whoopi Goldberg said, I'm uncomfortable with this black skin. I hate being called African-American. She's not a mulatto. It's a mindset that our people have developed. When you talked about this class that this man created, he created it just for that reason. Sometimes it worked for him. A lot of the times it didn't. You pointed out this guy, Jesse Williams. Because he went after a white woman. Okay. But you got another brother here that's more black than some of those people that you're talking about. You just gave football examples a little while ago. You got a man here that went to Ghana because he wanted to discover who his people is. He didn't say, I'm a mulatto. He could have groveled to get back in football. He told football basically to kiss his behind. Come on, man. You can't. You too smart for that.
You're too smart for that, Jay.
Elliot,
I'll leave you with this. You got to contextualize, and I'll give you the perfect example. Omarosa, Ben Carson, but then again, do you think that Omarosa and Ben Carson are just as dangerous as Clarence Thomas?
Certainly, they all in the same bag. Put it that way.
No, they're not. I wouldn't put them all in the same bag.
And I'm glad you mentioned Thomas because he's not a mulatto either.
Put in the bag. No. But none of them are mulattoes, though.
Exactly. That's my whole point.
No. But the point is this: they sleep with the enemy, except for Omarosa and Ben Carson. Now, if I had to take any of them and deal with them, who you think I would take?
I have no clue.
I'll tell you right quick. I'm a Rosa.
Well, you can have at it.
Thanks, Jay. All I can say is I think exactly where you're coming from. But you got to remember, Whoopi Goldberg is a notorious Neanderthal sleeper. You know what I mean? Clarence Thomas, we don't even have to talk about Clarence. And, you know, Ben Carson is a strange, strange Negro man. But Omarosa, is on a different level as far as I'm concerned. Omarosa is the type of person that I believe you could talk to and point certain things out.
Yeah, go ahead. Have at it.
Be careful.
Be my guest.
Huh?
Be careful with dealing with. I advise us all, be careful with dealing with individuals to try to make.
No, you can't change them, though. I know.
No. That's not my point. That's not my point, because the point that you're raising, which is important for us to, when we're looking, making a political analysis, is: are we talking about the segment of Black people who see that we have to be self-sufficient? And when we bring up individuals and then make the analysis based off of what the individual do, I mean, we can extrapolate that represents a group.
But then you would have to say, Omarosa politics is more about self-sufficiency than those other three are. She, if you know anything about Omarosa, believe it or not, Omarosa is more Black than them three will ever be. She's done more in the community. Well, I mean, Omarosa honestly has a history in being in the community and doing certain things. Now, she may have gotten caught up in Trump because of whatever, but she's not on the level of no Whoopi Goldberg or no Clarence Thomas or what you call him. She's on a whole different level. And
well, Jay, I'm gonna let you go. I'm gonna let you go.
Have a good day.
I talk to you. You know, Richard, it's interesting conversation that Jay brought up. Right. I posted and the reason I mentioned that is because we know that white folks and white supremacy developed this class system, especially among Blacks, to cause problems.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be more prominent than in South Africa. Now, I put a thing on the Time for Awakening Facebook page. No, I put it on the website. And I put a video up there because it's a cross-section of our folks in South Africa that's speaking on this issue. It was a school district in South Africa that the parents were up in arms. Now, check this out, Richard. It's a colored school district. There was a Black man that became principal of this high school. And the colored parents said that they didn't want a Black as their high school principal. They wanted a colored. Now, colored is a, for those who don't know, is a racial group that basically, the white oppressor started in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a buffer group. Now, when you act in that fashion, then you play into white supremacy. When you don't act in that fashion, then you create a problem for the people that created the buffer group.
Mm-hmm.
And I played the video because they went out, they talked to, it was a Black professor in South Africa that was talking about this whole thing. Now, they used it over there as colored and all this other stuff, but here it's the terms that Jay was just using, mulatto, octoroon, quadroon, whatever. The same philosophy, same formula. The professor over there was talking about how it's used in South Africa. And then they started interviewing people. Now, I'm colored. I want you to go on there and look at that video.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like the listener go on there to go to timeforawakening.com. You'll see it up there at the scroll about this school that didn't want this Black man to be the principal. All of them are Black, but one group considered themselves colored. Now, when you look at the video and the people in the video saying, I'm colored, well, I'm Black, I'm colored. And you're looking at these people. Now, some of them came off right and explained to the people that it's not about this group that this man has started. And we need to stop this foolishness. But some people buy into it wholly. And it was really a eye-opener for some of our people that's not aware of what white supremacy has created all over this planet. And especially in areas where it's been the black populations. So yeah, I mean, it was,
all over, and you know, Elliot, I definitely need to review that, and I heard Dr. Cambone make the same kind of argument on Abibi Tunkasa. Is that how you say it?
Abibi Tunkasa.
Make the same in relationship to looking at India, South Africa, and America as it relates to, I believe that was human rights violations. And, you know, and earlier I was enthralled with a sociologist, Oliver Cox, who did caste, class, and race. And he looked at India, and he looked at race, and he looked at class in order to make the distinction. And it's no doubt about it that race is, especially as you say, in all Europe, America, or Anglo-America, Eurasian America, or amongst the Eurasian, is the predominant social structure that things are viewed from.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else is created to be that buffer when you look at it from a sociological perspective. And an economic perspective, and a dominance perspective, and a control perspective,
mm-hmm.
and a power perspective. So I, you know, that's why it gets difficult when we're, you know, having this discussion, which I think is helpful.
Yeah, you know, you got to have.
I think it's helpful.
Yeah.
But if we're truly looking at it from the position that we're in, we're not just sitting as passive observers. We're trying to communicate the need for the acquisition of power. But we have to understand the environment that we're in, that we are either power being held from us or power being taken from us. Hmm. Or power that we are going to get. And that's other, you know, when we don't, you know, we'll get caught up in labels in our dialogue, and we won't be able to help and move the analysis forward. And that's what I have a little challenge with, because as you said, the color variation, I see we use that all the time. It's not about color.
Especially color among our people. No, exactly.
Yeah. It's not about color. It's about controlling your own destiny. And you define that. You know, and you stick to that definition. The question is, can you stick to that definition despite of the circumstances and the consequences that will come to you for doing that? Because if you don't, then you're not sticking to the power relationship, and you definitely can't get other people to respond to you as if your definition was theirs.
Wow. You know what? Let's take another call here. Let's go to, look like we're at Dallas. Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling
Brother
from?
Brother Elliot.
Hey, sir. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine. Hey, Brother Richard. How y'all doing?
Brother Joe.
Yeah, I'm down here in Big D right now. And let me tell you, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, I had the honor. Sister Sarah called me yesterday. We had a nice conversation. And she's going to come by and pick me up tomorrow. We're going to go out for a bite to eat tomorrow. But finally, I'm going to get to meet Sister Sarah in person tomorrow. I'm so honored and I'm so humbled, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, you know. Mm-hmm. She good people, man.
Yeah,
I'm
so
looking forward to tomorrow.
You're down there enjoying yourself at the with your family reunion or something?
Yes, yeah. I am, Elliot. I am. I've seen family, Elliot and Richard, I haven't seen in quite a while. And stuff like that, you know. And then of course, you know, every reunion, whether it's on my mother's side or the father's side of the family, I'm meeting more and more cousins for the first time, you know.
Okay.
You know, cousins just keep coming. But all in all, I'm having a good time, man. And by the way, Brother Elliot, I did reach out to Brother Derek Muhammad, I called the mask and left a message for the sister, so she gonna try to get the brother to call me when he get a chance. Because I told her I'm gonna be here until Sunday. You know, I got down here yesterday. I'm not leaving out the Sunday afternoon. So hopefully, brother Derek Muhammad definitely call me and I can talk to the brother while I'm down here in Dallas. But like I said, I'm just looking forward to meeting Sister Sarah in person tomorrow. She said you're gonna stop right at the hotel tomorrow and pick me up and we'll go out for a bite to eat and get a chance to talk and everything like that.
Yeah, well, listen, I'm happy you're down here enjoying yourself, man, and meeting up with some of the Time for Awakening family, so to speak.
Exactly. That's right. You're right, Elliot. And, Elliot, it's just so weird. I was talking to a friend earlier today, when I got off the train, the train station, ironically, is only about maybe 3 blocks from where Kennedy got killed at. And I was standing by there yesterday because I went to the site, and it was, kind of surreal. I said, 50-something years ago when I was, 2 years old, a president of the United States got off right here on this spot. This was weird. And they got a little plaque there about, the 35th president, President Kennedy getting killed and all this stuff like that. It's just so weird, man. They just go to show you how wicked these demons is, man. They take out their own president right here on U.S. soil. He had to go overseas. They do it right on U.S. soil, They just go to show you what you're dealing with. And speaking of demonic people, You see this devil that's in the White House now? You see he is stone crazy. But see, these white folks getting just like I told you, Richard, on several occasions, Brother Elliot, these white folks getting just what they deserve. Like I said, Trump is going to destroy white people as we know it. When he gets through a white America, this country will never be the same again. And like I said, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has said it. Yeah, on fall of America, he said, going to come a time where America is standing in the world because their racism and mistreatment of their former slave, the Negro. He says they're going to have leaders that's a joke. He basically said in fall, they're going to have leaders that make mockery of them. And you see Donald Trump is making a mockery. And all them devils he getting rid of, France previous today, his former chief of staff, Jeff Sessions, though, Beauregard Sessions, the attorney general, he's on a hot seat. He just got rid of Sean Spicer. All these racist bastards that he's getting rid of, it's poetic justice. And like I say, Jeff Sessions, he old racist redneck that he is, he is so stupid. You're talking about somebody that don't even have a head. Trump done trashed him all over the place, and he ain't got enough sense to be a man and just walk away and say, man, F this guy. I ain't going to take this guy. But he's such a dope. He just sitting there while Trump just dogging him all over the place. But see, that's letting these white folks know that you put an idiot in the White House, and this is what happens when you put an idiot in there. This guy's crazy. He's not even narcissistic, Elliot and Richie. This man is just stone crazy, and white America deserves him. Trump ain't did enough to him.
I don't think he's gonna walk away from that job, Joe, because he has an agenda. I'm talking about Sessions has an agenda. He's gonna try to see it through.
Oh, I agree. But see, but this is the key, Ellie. You're right, Ellie. Because I don't know if you heard what Lindsey Graham, the old bigot from South Carolina, said today. He warned Trump. He said, if you fire Sessions, you're gonna have holy hell to pay. He's old Southern cracker, and so is Jeff Sessions, so they kind of stick together. But he just points out, like you said, how crazy these people are. But you're right, Elliot. Bottom line, Sessions is going to definitely try to stick around because he got a racist agenda and stuff. And Trump, I don't know if you saw today, yesterday Trump was addressing the police, these policemen. He actually urged the police to beat up people. Now, already, it don't take them devils to have much encouragement kind of black folks and people of color. But yet Trump got right on, and he got pushback from some of the police departments, which is probably just a public relations thing to look good. But the point is, you got a president of the United States urging the police to beat up people. When he say beat up people, he ain't talking about no white folks. Elliot? I think we could be very clear on that. He ain't talking about beating up on the white folks. He said, these thugs, when you arrest them, don't put them in the car nicely. Let them hit their head against the thing, rough them up and all that kind of stuff. And like I said, what he's talking about. So, we see clearly what you're dealing with. This man is an idiot. Like I said, white America deserves Trump, and they got him. And like I said, he ain't did enough to him as far as I'm concerned. Because like I said, he voted for him out of racism. And some of them are so stupid, they know Trump's policies hurting them, but they so hateful and bigoted, they still don't want to face reality. They put an idiot in there and stuff. But like I said, they get what they deserve, and this is why it's so important, like you say, Ellen and Richard, for us as black folks to get our act together. This is the time for the black man and woman to strike out on their own for self-determination, because you see clearly this country is divided. You know, like you said, this country is up for the taking. All we got to do is get ourselves together as a people, you know, try to stop this crazy, chaotic crime that's in our communities in Chicago, Philadelphia, all over the country, and put them Negroes in check. But this is time for the black man and woman to do something for self. It's ever. This is our time, man. Whether you come from the Marcus Garvey philosophy, Honorable like Muhammad Noble Drew Ali, this is time for us to do for self. Because we see clear that white America is crazy. They divided. They chaotic. This is time for us to step on our own and do what we have to do as a people for our own self-determination to create a future for ourselves and for our children, our grandchildren and stuff like that. So the time is now. You know?
That's it. That's true.
Joe?
You know, the time is now. But anyway, Ellie, thanks for you for the time. You and Rich, and I'll sit back and listen to the rest of it on the phone, rest of the show on the phone, man.
Hey, thank you for your call, man, and enjoy yourself.
Enjoy that family now. Yeah.
Hey, thanks, Brother Richard. Thanks, Brother Elliot. I appreciate it. Y'all brothers, keep doing what you're doing. Y'all keep the good work. I'll talk to y'all soon.
Peace.
Peace.
Hey, Elliot, the article about Kamala Harris, check this out. Harris got her start in 1994 by having an affair with Slimy Willie Brown, who was serving as the California Assembly Senator Speaker, and then became the mayor of San Francisco. Brown was 60 years old and Harris was 29 when their affair began. Harris was so brazen that she came out publicly as his date on his 60th birthday party, despite his wife of 36 years being in attendance. Harris slept with Brown for one reason. She used the corrupt San Francisco mayor to launch her rise to power. Daily Caller reports, as Brown's time as the speaker drew to a close in 1994, he named Harris to the California Medical Assistance Commission, a job that came with a $72,000 annual salary. Brown had previously appointed her to the State Unemployment Insurance Appeals Board.
So this woman slept her way into politics. And then she became the attorney general. So, you know, listen here. Come on. See, that's what I'm talking about, Richard. Now, they'll put, for some of our people that don't know, don't follow things, when they start, because they're going to see it, they're going to start promoting her. If the Democratic Party get behind her, you're going to start seeing her out there, and people are proud. Come on, man. This woman put more blacks behind bars when she was out there in California. You could see from the article that you read that she slept her way into her position, and who knows what position she was in order to get that position, if you know what I'm saying. So come on, man. How can that? What kind of values is that? Come on. I'm glad you read that for our listening audience. I think that went to what Jay was saying. I was unsure.
Yeah, right. I wasn't.
Well, we'll thank Brother Jay for that one there, and you kind of found it. That's what we're dealing with, man. That's what we're dealing with. That's what who this Democratic, if they push anybody, Cory Booker or Kamala Harris. That's black folks' choice to get behind.
And that's, I mean, it's so visible, and that's why those who are, you know, Elliot, you mentioned about these formations that are going on where they have these conventions. And we're asking for black people who have these different political persuasions to attend and network with each other and help deal with the or at least acknowledge the planks that they can deal with and the policies they can develop all over, you know, as one of the main conscientious black voters and contributors is doing, you know, because we have to create our own political and economic formation. I don't know, the language seems so simple, but the ability to be able to create the relationship with each other to do that, it's not difficult. It's more difficult now than probably at early times in our history, but it has to be done. It's the only saving grace. And I'm not saying we have to be uniform with each other. We can kick, fight, strike, you know, we can do that. But as Jay, I think one of the callers, Jay or was saying, was how do, as much as, and Brother Joe was saying, as much as Trump is doing, they respect the presidency.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what he pushed. It's not, you know, I forget me as the president. They respect the office. They could talk about him like a dog, but they will not disrespect the office. And until we create the organizational infrastructure and respect for the positions, not saying that we got the lockstep with the person who holds the position, but we have to respect the position. We have to respect the policy, the rule that we're going to come to the conclusion that as we say is going to give the best benefit, not to our individual selves, but to the people that we say we're supposed to be representing. When we can do that, when we get to that level of maturity, political and economic maturity, mental maturity, or position, then we are once again demonstrating power. And I ain't saying demonstrating power is going to be an easy thing, because we see in the history, every time we demonstrated power, we built those towns, right?
Yeah.
That was power. Wilmington, Tulsa, we built those farm cooperatives. You know, so we ain't talking about some abstract thing here. You know, it's, we're talking about what we've done, we can do, but the times is changing, we're dealing with, and we're the ones that have to advocate as that is necessary to do it. But you got to respect the positions. You got to be able to respect the ability to make a decision and stick to the decision. And you got to respect that each person is not going to agree with you. And you have to allow them the right to be wrong. That's I see in this here quest, Elliot. I mean, it's just because at the same time, there's another side of black people playing on another chessboard who will do anything to make sure that our pieces won't move.
Oh, most definitely. I agree with that.
Yeah, they will do. And that's why, and they're the ones that will say, well, we need a Corey. We need a Camilla. We need. But then when we look at, well, what is the policy? What is the programs we get out of it that I can feel good about? What you saying these people that we need has delivered us. The Pew Research says, obviously the people say, black people are saying, I don't see it.
I don't see it. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we're coming up on the end of, you know, but before we go today, it's an article that I want to share with the listening audience, Richard. I don't know whether you saw it. It was in the New York Times about the trash man in Memphis that was that Martin Luther King went down there to help when he was murdered. Did you see that article?
No, I didn't see it.
Share it with our listening audience, because it just shows you more and more, you know, where the stories come out. Things leaked out to the press, how this system has always looked to drive a knife to stick their foot out so you can trip our ancestors. It's a constant struggle. And if this was a so-called fair and righteous society, you wouldn't see this all the time where they're looking to take advantage of our people. But let me share this story. The title, Decades Later, Memphis to Compensate Black Sanitation Workers, Black Sanitation Strikers of 1968. It says, for 63 mostly uninterrupted years, the rhythms of Elmore Nickelberry's life have included the rumbles and roars of his Memphis sanitation truck. Even now at 85, the longest tenured employee in the city's history, Mr. Nickelberry still runs down the downtown route at 3 a.m. in the morning. And in the darkness, he cannot help but reflect during the collections across the street from the National Civil Rights Museum. Every night I go down there, I see someone taking pictures, says Mr. Nickelberry, one of the hundreds of black sanitation men who mounted a strike in 1968 to protest working conditions in the southern city that deeply split that was deeply split by race. And that does something to me when I think about what happened, says Nickelberry. But he did not have any real certainty about his retirement nest egg until this month, when the city said it intended to award a tax-free grant of $50,000 each to Mr. Nickelberry and 13 other surviving strikers, an improvement fix to one of the most bitter legacies of Memphis labor history. They've been saying that they didn't have no money, so I didn't think it was ever going to happen, says Mr. Nickelberry in an interview this month. I was shocked. But the sanitation workers of the 60s have long faced a gap between their retirement benefits and those of other city workers. The difference hinged on the choice of Memphis, the choice after Memphis recognized a union for the sanitation workers. They elected to participate in the Social Security instead of the Memphis pension plan. Only later did it become clear that the Social Security payments would be insufficient to provide a meaningful retirement, setting off years of talk and searches for legal loopholes. Throughout that time, Mr. Nickelberry kept going to work. I have a family, so I had to feed my family, he says. That's why I stayed. To Mr. Nickelberry, Memphis choice in an economic is an economic and moral reckoning, one that he hopes will allow a still divided and troubled city to move forward on other issues. He would like to see Memphis, the city where he was born and lived his entire life, aside from his stint in the army, embrace, as he described, King's ever-compassing vision. He said, I plan to use part of this grant money to travel to California for a vacation. The money, he said, will help me retire. He has not yet decided when his last route as crew chief might come. I still do the same thing I've been doing for 63 years. I enjoy my job, he says. But, as he says, the expected payments and a stronger retirement offered him a measure of vindication decades after he protested. That's something I always wanted, he said softly, something I always wanted. Now, you had a city that took advantage of black trashmen when they just signed that agreement to end the strike. And they decided to take a Social Security as opposed to the city pensions. The city of Memphis has been taking advantage of these men all these years. Only 13 of them left. A man out there, 85, still throwing trash cans because he got to work because he didn't have a retirement. And they come up with $50,000. I think this government liked giving people $50,000. They did that to the farmers. Black farmers, after they won this lawsuit against the federal government for discrimination, and they give farmers $50,000. That's supposed to compensate these men after you destroy their lives, and it's only 13 of them left. So they get off cheap, give 13 men $50,000. Yeah, I just wanted to share that story because
it's something, Elliot. I mean, it's heart-wrenching, you know. It's just, you know, it's mind-boggling that we deal with these. Because for me, Elliot, just hearing you read that story, as other stories like that, it's a mental shock. You know, it's just as you say, it just leaves me speechless because we see this over and over. You know, when you sit, as you read it, I'm thinking, and then they're going to say, we apologize. All that brutality, you know, all you're going to do, the state going to come back and say, we apologize. Oh, well, you know, you're too old. You should have been gone a long time ago. But since you're still here's
$50,000. And then you know what? I'm curious to whether he's going to get $50,000 or whether they're going to take taxes out of that. And
oh,
give him.
Don't say that. Don't say that.
Come on. Come on, you know, that's how they work. You know, I just want to remind our listening audience, me, myself, and Brother Richard, hopefully weather permitting, we'll be doing a live broadcast Saturday here at Malcolm X Park here in Philadelphia for the African Liberation Day celebration. A lot of people are going to be out there. Hopefully things will work out logistically. This is the first one that we'll be doing in an outdoor setting. We've done live broadcasts indoors. This is the first one we're going to be doing in an outdoor setting. So hopefully it doesn't provide that many challenges, and the weather will be great, hopefully. But just look forward. We'll make sure that you know, we put the announcements up so you can see it. We'll be talking about it again tomorrow. I mean, tomorrow on Sunday. But look forward to Saturday afternoon, probably starting maybe 12 o'clock, Richard. We'll see how things go. Broadcast for maybe 3 hours or so. Let's see how it goes. But I just want the listening audience to just be aware that we'll be doing a live broadcast, live from the African Liberation Day celebration here in Philadelphia. Dr. James Smalls will be there, the chairman. Fred Hampton Jr. will be there. A lot of folks will be there. And in fact, Fred Hampton, the chairman, Fred Hampton, is scheduled to be with us on Sunday. I got to talk to him to kind of nail things down. But there's going to be a lot of things moving forward that we'll be involved in, the Time for Awakening program. More things coming up that we're going to let the listening audience know about, and hopefully some more live events, some more speakers coming in that we'll be involved in. Yeah, let's keep on working, Richard. I think things is moving forward.
Great to hear. It's great to hear, Alan.
I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. A lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving